Collective, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with hosts Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown. Today we'll be talking about the alternative fuel biodiesel in an interview with Andrea DeFrancesco. But first, these updates.
I had the interesting timing to have finished rereading Orwell's 1984 on September 9th. Since then, I've been amazed by all the newspeak I'm hearing, things like smart bombs, friendly fire, and homeland security. So Meredith and I would like to enlist your help in tracking newspeak in the corporate media. Please contact us each week with your favorite or scariest newspeak, and maybe we can share it with your neighbors on an upcoming Radioactive. You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactivenews@hotmail.com.
Andrea DeFrancesco has been working on biodiesel for a number of years. While in California last year, she was involved in getting the recycling fleets at Berkeley Ecology Center converted to biodiesel. She's been back in Maine this year distributing information and working on a number of projects, including Home and Corporate at Home and Corporate. She runs her own pickup truck on biodiesel.
We have with us today Andrea DeFrancesco here to talk about biodiesel, but before we do, are you two related?
Never met her before in my life.
Oh.
Who is this?
Okay, I heard somewhere that you guys are sisters, and I'm just hoping
that's
not going to keep Meredith from asking the hard-hitting questions.
I trust her journalistic experience.
Okay, Meredith has no comment on that, but she's nodding. Anyway, what is biodiesel, Andrea?
Well, biodiesel is an alternative fuel, first of all. It's an alternative to diesel fuel. It's made out of vegetable oil. So it's number one, a renewable, and number two, it's domestically produced, and number three, it cuts emissions drastically. So basically what it is, it's a fuel that's made out of vegetable oil. You take vegetable oil that's either virgin, has never been used for anything, or that has been used to in a fryolator, like to fry French fries or donuts, and you cut it with a certain percentage of lye and methyl alcohol, and you stir them all together and let it sit, and the glycerin on the vegetable oil molecule actually drops off, and what you have left over are what is called methyl esters, and that's what you burn in your diesel engine. So it's an alternative diesel fuel. You can't burn it in just any gasoline engine, you can only burn it in a diesel engine. And the interesting thing about diesel engines is that although we tend to think of them as being exclusively petroleum motors, they were originally diesel engines were invented to run on peanut oil or oils like that. And the word diesel comes from Rudolf Diesel, who invented the engine. But just at the time that he was inventing this engine, the petroleum industry was getting very strong, and so they were able to exert their influence and make all diesels start running on petroleum because it was abundant and cheap at the time. But so once you've made this biodiesel, is what we call it, you can run it in any diesel engine without doing any kind of conversion whatsoever to the motor, which is why it's such an exciting alternative fuel, because these days a lot of alternatives necessitate the conversion of the vehicle. So if you have a fleet of school buses that are diesels and you want them to run cleaner, a lot of times people will want to run them on propane or compressed natural gas, and that means that they have to change all the running equipment in the school bus, and they have to retrain the people who work on the school buses, and they have to put in alternative infrastructure. But with biodiesel, all of that remains the same. You can mix biodiesel in any quantity with regular diesel, and you can switch back and forth, and you can run 100% biodiesel, or you could switch all the way back to regular diesel. And so you don't have to set up any different kind of infrastructure, and the maintenance is exactly the same because you're not changing your engine.
How did you get interested in this? How did you learn about it, first off?
I learned about it about 7 years ago. Maybe a little less. I've always been interested in alternative fuels, and I do a lot of work on engines and on cars. For two reasons I'm interested in alternative fuels. One, because of the emissions that come out are so obviously detrimental to, our environment and to our health. But the other thing is just working on these motors is you know, it's really nasty. It's, you get covered in this, you know, in this diesel, and you get covered in, you know, all the, and you're breathing all the exhaust all the time, and it's you know, it's not nice to see all your mechanic friends get sick once they turn 60. And, you know, I mean, it's a real thing that, you know, you can really see the effects of these poisons that we're relying on to transport us. And there's so many other ways to provide transportation to ourselves that aren't poisonous. And this one is, I found most attractive because it's renewable, it's domestic, and it's so easy. It's so easy to do, and there's other better alternatives which will be coming online at some point, like hydrogen fuel cells, for example. But those you have to change everything in order to do that. This is something that, you know, you could be running on a terribly, you know, polluting diesel bus today, and tomorrow you could be running biodiesel.
Did you already mention how you make biodiesel?
Not exactly, but it is something that is it's available commercially, but it's also something that you can make at home, which is also something that makes it very, you know, unique and desirable, so that someone who owns a diesel vehicle could just begin making, with very little trouble, could begin making the fuel themselves. And the way you do that, we're not going to just go through the whole recipe, but if people are interested, they can contact me. I'll give that information later. But you basically just, if you wanted to make it at home, you could collect waste fat from behind the Dunkin' Donuts or behind, you know, Duffy's. And mostly people don't mind, you know, they don't have much, they usually have to pay someone to get rid of it anyway. So you go and collect it, and you could mix it, you know, if you wanted to mix 5-gallon batches of it, you would get your methyl alcohol, which is basically dry gas, but you can also get it in larger quantities in other places. And your lye, which is basically Red Devil lye drain cleaner, but you can also get it in more pure forms, but that's the basic. And you determine the quantities that of those two substances that you need to mix with the vegetable oil based on the pH of the fat that you've collected. And you mix those all together for a certain amount of time. You could use a, you know, you could use a blender if you're making a tiny little batch just to test, or you can use a big paint stirrer on the end of a electric drill if you want. And then you mix them all up, and then you let them settle, and it just, the glycerin drops off, and the glycerin separates from the methyl esters, and you can really see it's a straight cut. You can really see where the glycerin and the fuel divide, and then you just draw off the fuel and strain it and burn it in the motor. It's a fairly simple process. And
how much of it does it take? How much do you get a lot of miles per gallon? I'm just trying to get a sense of, like,
The mileage of the biodiesel to regular diesel is essentially the same. And it's the same performance. We have some people have recorded a slight drop in power, but we've also had other people who have recorded an increase in power. And the interesting thing about biodiesel is, in addition to it cutting emissions, which I'll go back to in a second and tell some exact figures, but it also runs in the engine better. It's especially with the increased emissions standards that are being imposed by the government, they're being required to clean up the diesel fuel. And one of the major things that they're doing is taking the sulfur out. And taking the sulfur is a real lubricator. And a lot of diesel engines are fuel lubricated. So the pumps and things inside the engines are lubricated by the fuel. So once the sulfur is taken out of the diesel, there's been a lot more, we've been seeing a lot more wear on the internal parts of a diesel engine. With the biodiesel, there's no sulfur in it to begin with, and the lubricity is incredible. And there's been studies where they have run engines, similar engines on diesel and on biodiesel, and then taken them apart and examined them, and the engines run on the biodiesel have had less wear and tear on them because of the increased lubricity. Biodiesel is a more oxygenated fuel, which means it has more efficient combustion. And when you put it in a motor, it smooths the motor out, it quiets it. And we had one thing, I was working out in Oakland, California, with a at a place called Cytoculture with someone named Randall von Wedel, who's been, you know, who's been researching biodiesel and using it for a long time. And we had gotten a place called the Berkeley Ecology Center to switch all of its recycling trucks over to biodiesel, 100% biodiesel. And they had about 12 big Volvo, you know, recycling trucks, big old garbage trucks. And they, the day that we switched them over to biodiesel, they would pull the diesel trucks up there, belching their black smoke, and turn them off, and we'd pump them full of biodiesel, and they'd start them back up, and they'd just be puffing a little bit of white smoke, and it was just, I mean, you know, all of us had seen the biodiesel running before, but it was just such a, you know, a blatant difference that it was so exciting to see just how wonderful it was. And some of the guys who drove the trucks didn't realize that the trucks had been switched over, and they were, you know, they were reporting increased power and was wondering what was going on. And there's been other cases where people have switched their fleets and didn't tell the drivers, or didn't tell the maintenance people, and that drivers would come back saying, you know, oh, have the vehicles been tuned up, because they were running so much better.
Can you give us some examples of people around the country who, or around the world, that are using biodiesel right now?
In California, there's a lot more, because the emission standards are so much more stringent that fleets have been forced to look for alternatives to diesel, because they're further along in their cleanup process. So there's, I think, the first, there's various national parks that are beginning to use it, for one thing, because there's higher air standards in national parks. So I think the first national park was the Channel Islands National Park in California that was brought on due to the hard work of Randall von Wedel of Cytoculture in California. And there's, I think, the longest running fleet is in the township of Medford, New Jersey. And that's been running since 1997. That's a school bus fleet that has been running on biodiesel year-round since 97. And in between, there's, I know Cincinnati has run on it, Chicago buses run on it, there's buses in Arizona, there's lots of school bus fleets across the country, and more city buses. Also, airports are getting more and more interested in it. The San Francisco airport, for their ground transportation, because these bigger airports have lots of diesel buses that act as shuttles and you know, run all over the airport, just belching out all of these horrible emissions all the time. And a lot of them are starting to run on the biodiesel now too. In this state, we don't have any large fleets running on it that I know of, but there is quite a bit of interest, especially lately.
And you've been talking with some people lately, yes?
Yeah. We just this Thursday had a meeting with Acadia National Park, and they have been talking with distributor called World Energy out of Cambridge, who distributes biodiesel, and Acadia National Park is very interested in using it for their diesel equipment. The other thing that I didn't mention is that biodiesel can be used in place of home heating oil, and that's also something that they're looking into. It runs, you know, just like, you know, home heating oil and diesel are the same thing, so you can just put it into your home heating system if you burn oil. And so the park does heat a lot of buildings with oil. So right now they're going and looking at the viability of getting it shipped into the area. The city of Bangor is very interested in running its municipal vehicles on it. The city of Portland has gotten very, very interested. In addition to, there's many people in the area that I've talked to who are interested in running their private vehicles on it, or just, you know, interested in finding out more about it. And I should probably say now about the emissions, why people are so interested in addition to the fact that it's a domestically produced fuel, which makes, you know, it's pretty attractive to be able to produce our fuel in our own country instead of having to depend on all this, you know, out of this world infrastructure, and especially in these times. But the emissions, the cut in emissions is incredible, and if you burn 100% biodiesel, you're cutting the total hydrocarbons by 93%. By 93%. The carbon monoxide by 50%. The particulate matter by 30%, the sulfates by obviously 100% because there's no sulfur in it. And those are just some of the cuts that you see, the, some of the most dramatic ones. And like I was saying before, you can run diesel, you can run biodiesel in any amount with petroleum diesel. And a real popular way to run it that has been approved on a federal level and has the backing of a lot of equipment manufacturers, so it won't compromise your warranty, to run on B20, which is 20% biodiesel in 80% regular diesel. And just running it 20% cuts the hydrocarbons by 30%, the carbon monoxide by 20%, the particulate matter by 22%. The one thing that doesn't drop is the nitrogen oxides. Those go up slightly, but it's 2% with 20% biodiesel. That there's a lot of research being done on the nitrogen oxides. Those are worrisome because they are one of the greenhouse producers, but only when in combination with other emissions. So the other emissions are being cut if you use biodiesel. So there's the overall effect is one of a decrease in potential greenhouse deterioration.
Now, Home and Corporate is thinking about getting a pump right here in Orland. That's
one of the thoughts. Yeah, Home and Corporate in Orland is very, very interested in the fuel as well, and they're just exploring their options and what resources they would need to, you know, what infrastructure they need to set up. But their you know, final goal would be they would like to produce it here, and they would also like to open a pump to open it to the public so that you could just pull up and fill up your diesel vehicle with the fuel. And they would, that's something that they have a lot of interest in. And it, you know, there's, as always, there's the one of the biggest things with this fuel is that because it's an alternative and not many people are using it, that it does, there's a price increase because it, you have to pay extra for the shipping because it's not just everywhere. So that's why it's exciting that Acadia and Bangor are interested in it, because if they start purchasing it in larger amounts, then the price drops dramatically. To have large amounts shipped up on a regular basis means, you know, a steady market for it, and instead of sporadic, you know, deliveries of 55 gallons or whatever.
I think the Audubon Expedition bus, I think I read somewhere that they're using that or considering using that. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't, but that's possible. There's so much interest in it. Just in the past year, it's amazing. When I was working out in Oakland, I started working on it, I guess, the summer of last year, and there was hardly anything going on with it. There was, you know, we were, you know, trying to get interest here and there, and the price was very, very high because there was only sporadic shipments coming into, I was working in the Bay Area, and there was only sporadic shipments of it. I went away for 2 months, and I came back, and in those 2 months, from nothing being shipped into that area, there were two rail cars full being shipped on a regular basis into that area. The price had dropped by over $1 a gallon. I mean, it was, you know, it's very, the interest in it has just been growing and growing and growing, and just as people are learning more about it. And one thing that I encounter a lot of people saying who are skeptical is, you know, when I first start talking about it and wanting to put it in the equipment, is if it was such a great thing, then everybody would be using it. And, it, you know, why isn't everybody using it if it's such a great thing? Well, it's because, no, you know, people don't know about it. The more people know about it, the more people use it, and people are having, you know, a lot of satisfaction with it.
Great. And you've also considered the potential of using it in boats as well, marine.
Yeah, it's really nice for
being used on COA on the island generators.
Yep. On their offshore operations, they have it for backup power for their generators, and they use it in a tractor there. So it's, yeah, it's being used all over. You can actually buy it at the pump in Arundel at a place called the Solar Market. And so there's a lot of people coming to buy it from that pump, you know, just pull up to the pump and buy it. The Camp Chewonki is actually making their own. A man named Peter Arnold down there is producing it on a fairly large level. There's some of the schooners offshore here are running on it. There's endless people are using it.
So how can people get in touch with you, or are there other places that they can go for more information about this?
There are. There's a lot of places that they can go. First of all, they can contact me. I'm Andrea DeFrancesco, and they can call 469-6235, and if I'm not there, you can leave a message. There's a distributor called World Energy, and they're out of Cambridge. They have a lot of information. You can talk to Keith Chiampa, and his number is 617-889-7300. The place that you can buy it in Arundel, Maine, is called the Solar Market, and it's on Limerick Road in Arundel, and their number is 985-0088. And Cytoculture and Rando von Wedel, who has just a vast amount of knowledge about it, because he's been studying it for probably longer than anybody in the country, is 510-233-0102, or you can find him on the computer at www.cytoculture.com/biodiesel, and cytoculture is spelled cytoculture. And you can reach World Energy on your little computer at www.worldenergy.net. And those are just some good starting places. There's scores more, but those are just starting spots.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
That was Andrea DeFrancesco discussing biodiesel fuel.
I think that the struggle for the airwaves, for the Pacifica Network, is one of the most important things going on in the country today, because it really represents a struggle for the hearts and minds of the people. And if we can't communicate to people, we're not going to be able to reach them. And this is about that. And about what they're not telling us, why we need shows like Democracy Now! You'd think I'm really trying to ingratiate myself with the staff of Democracy Now!, but... And it's true, but... The CIA is pushing crack in the ghettos of L.A. while the food crops in Colombia get sprayed by the DEA. The FBI is reading your email with something called the carnivore. While the rich are getting richer and the poor are staying poor, they're launching nuclear-powered ships up into space. One little accident could wipe out half the human race. They're putting radioactive waste into your silverware, or maybe your toaster, or perhaps your wheelchair. The Air Force is bombing Iraq every other day. They don't like the government, so the children have to pay. And the ozone hole is growing, the sheep are going blind, while the U.S. spends more on arms than the rest of the world combined. Journalists are getting fired from San Jose to Atlanta when they write about reality, not a fluff piece for Fanta. A death threat every week, and sometimes life is short when the truth is too dangerous for someone to report. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? The cancer rates are skyrocketing, though people are smoking less. If you live near a nuke, your life is bound to be a mess. Clean water's almost gone all over the earth, and what's left they want to privatize and see how much it's worth. Chevron is gunning down the students of Nigeria, turning the land to waste while the babies die of diphtheria. And the temperatures are rising, the world's forests are on fire. Pretty soon Brazil will be one raging funeral pyre. Will tell the people that free speech is a ruse. The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control, heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? One in 3 adult Americans cannot read or write, and their children go to bed hungry every night. 2 million U.S. citizens are rotting behind bars, and while they're there, they're working hard building parts for cars. The Army's running torture schools to keep the earth under control, and they're relocating Navajos so they can mine some extra coal. Our taxes pay McDonald's to sell tumors in Shanghai, while 100,000 poison vets are just about to die. And who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control? Heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? The people are resisting wherever you may go, and this is the single biggest fact they don't want you to know. From New Delhi to New Mexico, there are battles going on, and the darkest hour is just before the dawn. In Berkeley and New York, they're raiding radio stations, trying to turn the voice of the people into the voice of the corporations. Will we seize the airwaves, wipe the sweat off of our brow, stand and face the beast and shout democracy now? Who will tell the people that free speech is a ruse? The corporations run the country, and then they make the news. Is it media or mind control? Heroic victories or crimes? Who will tell the people that we're living in these times? That we're living in these times? That we're living in these times.
That was David Robix with Who Will Tell the People from his latest CD, Living in These Times. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown.
And I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
We'd like to thank Heather Candon for engineering today,
Yay.
Andy Buckley for web support, and you for listening and acting. You can contact us here at WERU or by emailing radioactivenews@hotmail.com. And you can listen to archived Radioactive programs by visiting our website, www.freespeech.org/RAN for Radioactive News, or at Maine Indie Media, which is maine.indiemedia.org. Please join us again next Thursday, and stay tuned now for Free Speech Radio News, followed by Democracy Now! In Exile.